All right, this is the Vet Student's Guide to Adulting podcast. I am Ethan Dahl, your host, and yes, I have ditched the long introduction audio that I had set up, and I thought, oh, this is awesome, and then I realized, my gosh, why do I play that every single time? So today, we're just going to get right into it, and I have a treat for myself and for the listeners. I am going to interview Dr. Chris Franklin and Dr. Katie Franklin. They are practice owners in Louisville, Kentucky. They own Dogwood Veterinary Clinic, just a terrific practice there, and new parents. They were students of mine back at Auburn University College of Veterinary Medicine, and they are now practice owners, and it is just going to be a treat to talk with them. I have Dr. Franklin and Dr. Franklin from Louisville, Kentucky. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
We're doing well.
Pretty good day so far. Another beautiful spring day in Louisville, Kentucky. So I haven't really even gotten into anything of how we met, but since everyone gets to hear me talk on these podcasts on a regular basis, how did we meet?
Well, let's see here. I was in my second year of vet school at Auburn. And a really good friend of mine meandered home one day and he said, you've got to go talk to this guy, Ethan Dahl, about your student loans. Because, of course, if anybody knows me, I'm always thinking about what I'm going to do financially and how I'm going to take on the debt when I was in school. And so we set up a meeting, and that first meeting, we were in one of those small offices that they gave you over there.
That's right.
Sitting down, talking about my student debt that I had acquired in just three short semesters. And I was actually getting ready to take off and go to Texas and work to try to pay for the next semester.
And Dr. Katie, you were like a year or so behind Dr. Chris, and I guess you and I think you may have taken the second year class that I taught. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So I was actually 3 years behind Chris, but knew you through him. But you and I also chatted about some of our plans, you know, after vet school, what we were going to do financially. And then I did also take your elective class.
Oh, yeah. It's actually funny having, you know, you guys are now parents and clinic owners, and it's just interesting to have been able to walk through the entire process with y'all. And really what's been fun for me is that y'all have let me be part of the process from start to now. And so tell me, did you know then, both of you, did you know you were going to want to own a clinic?
It's funny because I had kind of started going the other direction and thought maybe I didn't want to own a practice before I had met Chris, because my parents are practice owners and I just knew how much work that it was to own a practice. But Chris always had the intention of wanting to own his own practice, and doing it with him seemed less daunting than the idea of doing it by myself. So we thought together that we could make it happen.
It's funny because you always think you know what the future is going to hold. And before I met you, Ethan, I thought that I was going to own my own practice, but it was going to be mixed animal. And I was going to do a lot of equine and some cattle work because that's what I thought I enjoyed. And that right there tells you never to guess what you think your future is going to hold, because it'll change on you on a dime. But it's funny. I mean, you think back and it feels like it's been 7 weeks and it's been 7 years now since we first met.
And established a relationship. You know, I you guys being new parents and all, I feel like I'm part of your family.
I know. I never realized you've known Chris longer than I have.
No, that's good. So Chris, you had a unique kind of a sidestep from business ownership. You did an internship there in Kentucky. Tell me about that.
That's correct. So actually, if I remember correctly, I think you told me the whole time not to do it. ever since it was probably our second or third meeting, I ended up taking that elective class where we visited some of the small animal clinics and started to see some of the numbers and things, and I still was torn back and forth, and I got pulled from a previous mentor to come do an internship back up in Lexington, Kentucky, at Rudin Riddle. It was an equine hospital, a very large equine hospital, about somewhere between 45 and 60 vets, including the vets at the hospital and the ambulatory vets. And it was a really good experience. I mean, I learned a ton there. I didn't make any money. I didn't sleep any. It was stressful on Katie and I's relationship. But it was a very good learning experience for me in the realm of what I wanted to do and what I did not want to do.
You know, I think what about doing internships in general, and I think that you would probably agree with me. Actually, I think both of you haven't walked through it. You know, unless you're going to be a specialist and you know that you're going to be a specialist, an internship can turn into a not a wasted year, but a burned year where you're not getting as much value out of the potential. You know, a lot of these students that I've talked with over the years want to do an internship because they know they're not ready to practice medicine, although most of them won't admit that. And they think, well, if I can just get one more year under someone, then I can, you know, I'll be ready to practice. And you know, you guys know you're not ready to practice then either until you step into that small animal exam room. And, you know, the other thing about large animal, you know, I'm not opposed to large animal. I just know that based on where the money is and the comfort, even a big guy like you wants to be a small animal princess after about 2 years out on the range with your hand in a cow at 30 below. You know, so I'll take a step back and I'll say, when you two were students and you were starting the job hunt process, and I know, you know, of course, we just talked about going straight to Rudin Riddle, but what was that process like for you?
Well, for me, the experience is pretty interesting because I feel like I considered all aspects of it. When I first went to vet school, I wanted to do equine. And then after being in vet school, I was thinking I wanted to do small animal more just so I would have a better work-life balance. So when I was kind of looking around, I was getting near graduation, I was open to, I looked at small animal ER jobs, small animal. And then actually in my preceptorship that I had with Dr. Lee that you set up for me, which was such a great experience, I had been, you know, pushed away from doing equine because I thought I had to do an internship in order to be able to do it.
Yeah.
He kind of convinced me and helped me to feel confident enough that I could do equine without doing an internship first. That being said, I have a very unique situation that my dad's an equine veterinarian. So I get to work with him and do still have that mentorship without necessarily being an intern that, you know, doesn't get to sleep and doesn't get paid very well. So I get really, you know, a very beneficial situation for me. But I do still, I'm glad that I kept my eyes open and did look at different options. And I did end up practicing a little bit of small animal too. And now, you know, the ER clinic that Chris and I ended up both working some relief there, and now they end up sending us some cases sometimes. So you never know, you know, where things might take you.
Yeah, it's been an interesting process, and I think the more that I talk to former students that are now out for several years in practice, you never burn a bridge. You know, the veterinary industry is a small world, and then, of course, I'm sure it's that way for each vet school, but the Auburn University College of Veterinary Medicine world is a fishbowl. And so making great connections, you know, Dr. Lee that you mentioned is actually, if he's not already pulled the trigger on it, he's been talking about setting up a large animal internship for students, and I think you both would attest that there may not be anywhere better on the planet to go than his place.
Oh, it's true. Really, what's most important in your first year out, whether it's an internship or not, is just getting good mentorship, and I think that you can find that without it necessarily being called an internship. But if you're at a great place, like at Dr. Lee's, where you're going to get to do a lot of hands-on and that, you know, they're going to support you, but you're still going to be the one doing it yourself, and you can learn so much in that situation.
I think that's exactly right. And being, you know, I say that a lot myself, Katie, is that finding a place that's going to give you good mentorship your first 2 years is as good as getting paid at a high rate. And of course, everyone wants to be paid their value, and you should be paid your value. But finding somewhere where you can get really great hands-on mentorship is just terrific. So what was, Chris, what was the number one thing that you focused on? You know, having known you now for 7 years, you are confident in your skills and confident in skill set, rightfully so. But what were the things that you focused on when you took your first small animal job? You know, what were the things you were trying to learn the quickest?
So my goals when I went into small animal were to learn how I can own my own practice and be successful as quickly as possible. And so it was really important to me is to get into a situation to where I was able to look at books, see the numbers, see how the ordering happened, see how the ownership side of the practice worked, and be able to learn that aspect of it. And I think it's a flaw as well as a good trait that I have, that I'm a little bit overconfident with certain things. And that helped me a lot when I started my first small animal job. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me to kind of focus more on the management side of the practice that I was in. You know, I was in a fortunate situation, and I think it's something that the people around me helped open the door to, and me actively looking and doing everything I could to find this. It was actually looking back now, the stepping stones that I took to end up in small animal, where I ended up to start. It's kind of going back to that, you know, what your future holds. Don't ever try to guess or tell anybody what it's going to be. You know, I met Katie when we were in vet school, and I was taking your elective class, and we had the opportunity to go visit two successful small animal only practices. Mm-hmm. And one of those practices is the one that I actually ended up working at my second year out of school. Brought me back to Auburn where Katie was, and just start working there. So I had actually seen a lot of their numbers and understood kind of where they were success-wise before I ever started there.
Yeah.
And it helped me a lot for what my goals were, to be a practice owner. Little did I know that practice ownership was actually going to be built from the ground up. We really thought we were going to be buying something, and looking back, all of those, and I save everything. I mean, I had numbers from when I was in school taking the elective with you. Yeah. And I had numbers from every month that I was working at my first small animal job. And I use those constantly to base off how we're doing now. And so, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, and it's different for everybody, but the biggest thing for me was to be able to see the management side, because I got hardly any of that in my education.
You know, something you and I have talked about, and I know the three of us have talked about many times, is keeping up with your production numbers. And it's just critical that you understand how much you're producing and what that number actually means, whether you are simply an associate and you don't ever aspire to be more than that, or your aspiration is to be an owner. It's just critical that you keep up with and understand what your numbers are. So let's start from there. You guys are thinking, okay, we know we want to own a clinic. What was the process of, here's where I would like to be? Do I buy a clinic that exists? Do I start from scratch? If I start from scratch, how on earth do you build a place, or do you buy and renovate? Talk with me about the thought process that you guys went through.
Josh, I still don't know if I know the answer to all that. I guess it was probably in 2017, the end of 2017, sometime around November, December time, when I really started looking. And I actually reached out to you, Ethan, to get some contacts, just to reach out to and start looking. And I think Katie thought I was crazy because I'd been in my job for, I think, less than a year, maybe right at a year. And I was already looking for places that we could buy. And I kind of thought, how in the world do you do this? Where do you start? What do you find? And I was looking on some of these brokerage websites, and I had them emailing me anything that became available. And when something came available, I was calling the owners and trying to talk to them. There would be practices that had closed down and the building was for sale, but it wasn't actively practicing anymore, and I would call them.
We were open to everything. We were looking at equine, mixed practices. I mean, just looking at anything.
Yeah, at that point, there. We just wanted to own. Yeah. I mean, I just knew that I wanted to own. I don't think it was my plateau, but I'd kind of reached what my goals were, where I was, and I knew that if I didn't start the process then, who knows when I would ever do it. Because, I mean, once you start the process, it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, I think it was about 18 months before probably even longer than that, before we pulled the trigger and made a decision, said this is what we're going to do, and it wasn't an easy step forward. So I kept looking and looking, and long story short, what we ended up figuring out by the more looking we did is that we could, from what we thought, build a practice and start with zero clients for substantially cheaper than we could buy any practice that had reasonable growth ability in an area that could sustain growth that we wanted to live in, that we knew something about.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people ask us is, did you do, this is kind of jumping forward a little bit, is did you do demographics on the place that you built in? And actually we didn't. And the reason that we didn't is because Katie grew up here. Her dad has lived here for over 20 years now. We knew the area. We knew how the area had grown, and so we didn't find the reason to put funding into it. But with everywhere else that we were looking, we had no idea. We could speculate, but you're talking thousands of dollars to put into the demographics to know, is this an area that we want to buy a practice? How has this practice been successful, and is there room for growth for that practice? And so when we started looking at that, you just realize how with corporate veterinary practices now, and the rate when we were looking to buy that, they were buying practices up for an ungodly amount of money.
True.
For what they were worth, in my opinion.
True.
We couldn't afford to do it, and we thought that we would be a lot more successful starting our own, and it was a scary task. And so, I mean, what we ended up doing is we had kind of played with the idea a little bit on the area that we're in Louisville now. And we looked at the number of clinics in relation to where we were in Auburn, Alabama, and the number of practices that were in the square mileage that we thought we could be sustainable. And we found a spot, and then we just kind of took off from there. And I could get into detail after detail. You know that, Ethan. Heck, you were with me all along the way of planning and how you're going to do the layout and, you know, what you're going to have, you know, what we're going to do, because we built from the ground up. I mean, it was 100%, and it's a unique situation because of the area we're in. But the planning phases, you don't, and I couldn't even sit down right now and write down the list of things that we had to decide on and go through and plan for, because if you think that you know everything that's going to come about and you think you can plan for everything, boy, are you wrong.
Yeah, you know, we could probably talk, the three of us, for a couple of hours straight on just dealing with a contractor.
Oh, yeah.
having not bought one piece of veterinary medical equipment, not a dose of medicine, nothing, and we could probably just talk, and probably we would need liquor involved to tone us down a little bit, because there were some times that there were things that make you a little angry, but you know,
still do.
Yeah, you know. Right. So what would you say out of everything, though, was the most difficult part of the process? Was it deciding to buy or build? Was it deciding where? Was it the actual process of dealing with the vendors and the contractor? What was the most difficult process?
For me, I think the hardest thing to do, and the thing that took the most planning, and I'm a very obsessive compulsive person with lists and folders and files and everything, and I save paperwork, but the absolute hardest thing to do, you can work in a clinic, I don't care if you work there for 20 years, if you've never owned or built from nothing, knowing what you need to buy and have on day one.
Yep.
I mean, and it, all the way down to like your x-ray room. what's the state requirements for that? What do you have to have before they'll deliver it? What are you going to, you know, what kind of generator are you going to have? You know, what kind of drywall has to be on the wall? And I mean, just the little things that have to be approved in months in advance in the building process for that. And if you, you know, and I was so fortunate that Katie was working and I was picking up some ER shifts and I had moved back here. And I'll tell you right now, I can answer that question. If retrospectively I would have kept my job and tried to do this from 8 hours away, it would have been impossible. Yeah. That would have been the hardest thing to do. But just having everything planned out and knowing when things need to be delivered and what you need to have in that initial order, because it's a substantial amount of money and you don't know what you're going to need. Is it going to be on day one or at day 360?
And it was a tough decision for you to make to, hey, I'm going to quit my job and go build a clinic for 12 months.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we had stewed over that for a while, and we said, you know, I was going to move back home and start practicing with my parents, and I was going to oversee the project, which in hindsight would have gone terribly. I'm so glad that Chris came back. I mean, really, it is so much more work than we anticipated. I think that was the hardest thing for me during the building process. I mean, I was doing some of the things with the website and the client communication and the branding, but you know, a lot of the nuts and the bolts of the things that Chris was just talking about as far as planning the actual facility and what we needed to have in it, I mean, he was just working constantly on that. And, you know, once we actually had a building we could sit in, even before it was finished, he'd be up here until midnight, you know, just working on stuff. So it's just, it's so much more than you can expect because you really don't know what all you need to do. You just keep doing the next thing that comes up.
And it's not what us as veterinarians are used to. I mean, most of my time for the year that we were planning was me sitting in a dark basement on a computer.
Setting up the cornerstone took forever.
Planning, setting up software, patients. I mean, that kind of stuff you don't even think about. And, you know, and I can think back. It's so funny now. And I don't say all this stuff for it to be daunting to people.
Sure.
Because really, you know, in hindsight, looking back, it's like, I'd do it again.
Sure.
It wasn't that bad. But I think back, I can remember us sitting in a trailer in Auburn, Alabama, with Katie's parents and my parents there, and I think it was a football weekend, and we had, my dad is an architect, and we had, oh, it was your graduation. Dad had...
Not
dad
much had, going on that
don't
weekend.
Don't tell anybody that. Dad had a 3D layout of what our plans were at that point. Now, it didn't turn anything out like that. It was close, but... and you think back and we spent a ton of time and I had some resources that I took advantage of, but a ton of time for little stuff like that. And I bet I spent hours upon hours working on that stuff, but that stuff just kind of gets pushed down to the wayside. You don't think about, you know, those little things. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing that stands out in my head the most is you can work at any clinic you want to and pull this drug and pull that drug off the shelf. And you get used to having this type of suture and these surgical packs and these lights and this and that. But then when it comes down, okay, I need to buy this stuff. I want nice stuff, but I can't spend a fortune.
Yep.
And then I've got to have it planned out so that when I go to the bank, I'm getting enough money for it. And then I've got to get working capital. So it's just the planning of that stuff and knowing what I'm going to buy, how much money it's going to cost, and enough money to kind of back us up just in case something breaks or we need something more or business is not as good or, hey, just in case you have a pandemic in the
That's
middle
right.
of your first year being open.
I had that as my last question, but obviously it's affected business, but in from my viewpoint, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, it's really affected your thought process of how you're practicing medicine and maybe how this pandemic is going to change the industry to maybe a lot more drop-off or curbside service. What do you think about that?
I think it can. I really think one thing that is on the horizon, and I don't know if it'll take off or not, and this has kind of really boosted it a lot, is the telemedicine aspect. You know, just speaking from the state of Kentucky, they've not been big on it. They really didn't want it to take hold. But now since this pandemic, it's kind of been like, hey, we recommend you doing this. And so I do think drop-offs and people realizing that that's an option and being able to get things done while they, you know, get their pets just general preventative care things done is really, I think that's going to be kind of eye-popping for some clients at clinics that, that had that availability. But, you know, me personally, and some people would strongly disagree with this, I don't know that we've noticed a huge difference for us, but you have to remember, we don't have last year to compare off of.
Right, yeah.
Everything's growth for us. So, and so people ask us, well, how's it treating you? I don't know. I mean, it seems fine. I'm not too worried yet. So,
I mean, we're just thankful, really, that we're considered an essential business right now, and that we are able to keep practicing and just try to do that as safely as we can for our staff and for our clients. I mean, Chris and I are still, you know, optimistic we're going to get a vaccine and that we're going to return to normal life one of these days. But, I mean, we enjoy meeting with the clients in person and building that personal relationship with them. I mean, it's definitely different having to do curbside and communicate with them over the phone. So, I mean, that's one of the cornerstones of our practice is building relationships with the clients. So, obviously, we'll be looking forward to the day that we can do that in person.
Things get back to normal, huh?
Well, yeah. And I think, honestly, now that Katie said that, you know, and I've had a couple of our technicians say something to me about it, is I think it's a real sticky point that people need to be cautious of in the profession of not getting comfortable with this.
Yeah.
Because it's not what people really want the majority of time.
That's a good point.
If it's something easy, if it's vaccines or something like that, people don't mind. But if you have a new client coming in and you can't talk to them face to face, there's no relationship there. And so it's very difficult to create relationships with your clients. And that's what our business is built on. And we haven't gotten into that any, but you know, when we decided to build a practice, that's what our foundation was, is, you know, who cares how good you are at medicine and what kind of surgeries you can do if you can't actually create a relationship with the clients, the people behind the pets. And that's something that's kind of been lost with all this stuff that's going on.
That is a great point you two have just made. And actually, I'm sitting here scratching notes on a pad. As you both know me fairly well, I'm not very bright when it comes to these vet things because I'm not a vet, but I am great at stealing ideas from other people. I reference liberating the idea, and then I will act like I came up with that in just a few weeks. So, you know, you've built a beautiful, beautiful clinic in a wonderful area, and you were talking about demographics earlier. You know, really the truth is a small business owner cannot afford, as you said, to do a demographic study. But what you can do is piggyback off of demographics that big boxes have done. You know, a Home Depot, a Lowe's, a Walmart, one of these big box groups, or neighborhoods. And when you can see and project forward that a neighborhood is about to be built or is in the process or just built, you know, you can piggyback off of that if there's not a saturation of veterinarians. And that's one thing you guys have taken advantage of quite well. The building a practice or even buying a practice is daunting when you start listing off the things that you've talked about. But I guess it's kind of the how do you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you've done. But what advice would you give to someone that's thinking about ownership either 3 to 5 years from now or as quick as possible?
Do it now.
Start the process, huh?
I would do it. I mean, that's my opinion. Katie may have something separate to say, but I mean, my opinion is I think a lot of us, and I got scared of this happening to me, as I was making decent money. And it was hard to make that decision. You know, we were happy with what we were doing. But I knew that if we didn't do it now, you blink and 5 more years is gone.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, talk it down. It's a lot of work. But the quicker you start, the quicker it's over with. And I do think that a lot of people, including banks and things like that, are behind veterinarians because we're such a hardworking group of people and successful group of people. That they want to financially support us. And so don't think for a minute that, oh, I can't do it because I don't have any money.
Yeah.
There's things you can do to be able to start that dream that you have. And I think the most important thing is that when you're comfortable is to not think about it too long and just do it.
Well, I'm going to say something maybe a little bit different than what Chris said, and Ethan, you might know better about this from the standpoint of maybe you have more relationships with banks and things like that. But, I mean, we did have to have a down payment to get things started, and I think that a lot of veterinarians that come out of school and they're trying to pour as much as they can into their loans and they're not saving, and, you know, maybe you can find a way to finance it without a down payment, but in case that you need one, I would keep that in mind from the start and try to gather some assets so that if you need it, you can start. I'm in a bunch of Facebook groups for veterinarians, and, you know, I see people saying, you know, I don't have any savings, I want to buy a practice, things like that, and, you know, they feel stuck, like that they can't, and they are maybe farther into their career than they wanted to be, and they realize that it's going to take more time than they thought to get started. So
it's a great point. There are vet-specific lending that are still loaning money. Actually, I was part of a sale and purchase with clients of mine. The seller was a client, and the buyer was a client just this past week. And it did close, but I, you know, there's lenders that are still lending, but, you know, some make you put money down. Some have some a little bit loose guidelines depending on, you know, what time of year it is and what type loans they're making. But yeah, it's a great point. You need to be financially prepared. So tell me this, and this is something that I have not asked you in our private conversations. What's it like working with your spouse that's a DVM?
Well, we don't work side by side practicing together. So, you know, we can't really attest to that. You know, we kind of work, I think, we try to help each other in this venture, and that Chris is the main practicing veterinarian right now. And I manage the social media and the marketing and the branding of our practice, which I think is a good setup because I'm not quite sure what the branding and marketing would look like if Chris were...
It would be ugly. It would be ugly. It's tough. I mean, I don't think we can downplay it. I mean, there's times that it's tough and you have to sit and you have to talk about it. But I think it's something that you told us from the start. Again, don't get the big head, Ethan. But it is something that you kind of told us from the beginning, is that, you know, somebody's got to be in charge and somebody's got to be the one that's, you know, running the practice.
And true. I think we do a pretty good job with that. The part that is the hardest, I think, is just really like the workload. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, Chris, I would say, is the leader between us in the practice, and a lot of times is stuck late at night working, you know, longer hours. And, you know, I think that would probably be hard for any couple, you know, with somebody who has to work a lot. But that part can be challenging sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, I've talked with you guys, you know, and I'll say it now for the audience, but, you know, somebody ultimately has to be the person that says, okay, we've talked it out, and I'm going to make this decision. Now, fortunately for you guys, you know, there are decisions that Chris has to make, and there are decisions that Katie has to make, and you have so far been able to kind of let that go, the grip go, and not, you know, step on each other's toes. So my last question and then a wrap up is for Katie. Katie, can you be a mom and own a vet clinic?
This is funny. I've just had to get my baby from his crib. Because he wanted to interrupt the podcast.
That man's got something to say.
I think you can be a mom and own a vet clinic for sure. I think that you really have to be intentional about, you know, what you want your life to look like and how you're going to make it work. I definitely think you can't do it without good help. You know, whether it's a good nanny or a husband. I mean, if you were trying to be a solo practitioner, you know, with a child, and you wanted to have your practice open 7 to 6, you know, but which is our hours, I mean, you're going to have somebody to help you as far as, you know, to and from daycare or, you know, taking care of the child or whatever it is. And I mean, like I said before, I'm in in these Facebook groups full of moms that are veterinarians making it work every day, but it definitely has its challenges.
I'll tell you this right now, no man could do it.
That's right. That's obviously the old joke that if it were up to men, they may never have a child, but they certainly wouldn't have a second one. there's not a chance. There would be a lot of only child families. So yeah. let's wrap up. And is there anything that I'm leaving out? What tell me if there's anything that you'd say, oh yeah, by the way, this.
I mean, I think I do have always have one little ending thing to say. I guess I feel like I got to have the last word in here. But I mean, I think the thing is that it's different for everybody. You know, I don't know. It's funny because my father-in-law always says, "Hey, was your internship worth it, you think?" And people make comments and things like that. You know, and I think it's different for everybody. The internship for me was peace of mind, that I knew that. I tried that out and I didn't want to do it. That way I wasn't looking back and telling myself for 20 years, I wish I would have tried that. I think for some people, they need that mental preparedness before they have anything on their own. It by no means prepares you for having your own cases. Just because you do an internship, whether it's small animal or large animal, you still have to take that next step and have your own cases. But it does mentally prepare some people before they're ready to be on their own. And that goes all the way into practice ownership. I mean, no matter how many jobs you have and what your management role is at your job and what kind of task your current boss lets you have, until you're doing it on your own, you're not ever prepared for it. And so I think that the biggest thing is that every opportunity that you get, whether it's an elective in school or it's doing an externship at a mixed animal practice or an internship at an all equine practice, I think that each one of those, you need to take everything you can get out of it. And once you make the decision, you've got to go at it kind of all in and try to acquire as much information as you can and knowledge as you can, and mentally grow if it's not physically or financially growing you, to help you prepare.
Always getting better.
Whatever's going to come. Whatever's going to come. Because you never know. I mean, we don't know what next year's going to bring. Who knows? We may start doing equine.
It's funny, Chris, that looking back and just having this conversation has been interesting for me, because everything that you two have gone through leading up to where you're at now was preparing you to be where you're at now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, people ask, like, if they want to own a practice, you know, what could they do to prepare themselves, you know, before that they start or before that they own? And I never know what to tell them in that regard, just because there really is just no way to explain what it's like until you're doing it yourself. But I would just say, like Chris said, if you can just pull from every experience that you've had, I mean, things have helped us along the way that we never expected. I mean, just any clinic we've been in, we've taken ideas from that, things from school, and it's all just kind of helped us to put it together.
Yep, no doubt about it. Well, you have a beautiful clinic. You have a wonderful young new son and a great practice. I cannot thank you enough for giving me this much time late in the evening and having to parent and wrap your day up and everything else. So I'm very, very grateful.
Absolutely. It was a joy.
No problem. It was fun.
All right. I'll talk with you guys soon. So that's going to do it for today. Please remember that if you are a VBMA group and you're interested in me doing a webinar for you, or when all of this mess with the coronavirus lifts, if you would like for me to come to your school and do a VBMA presentation, I can also spend about a half a day and do some of the one-on-one meetings that I've done in the past. Remember, almost all of the information that I'm covering in this podcast is coming from some variation of a chapter in my book, The Vet Student's Guide to Adulting. Probably the best place to get that book now is directly off of my website, ethandahl.com/vetbook. And I'm also thinking about holding a contest, and I'm really not sure what that's going to look like, but a contest where I donate books for an entire fourth-year class at a vet school of your choosing. So if you have some ideas of how I could run that contest and increase some of my listenership. Would love to entertain some emails from you, ethan@ethandahl.com. Now, if there's anything that I can do for you, any questions that I can answer, send me an email. I've gotten several of those over the last several weeks. Just send it straight to me at ethan@ethandahl.com. If you have some ideas about what you would like to hear in a future podcast, I'd love to have those as well. And just would love to hear from you. How's the podcast doing for you? Is there anything I need to adjust or change? And in the meantime, I'm going to start picking up my pace on putting these podcasts out. I've had several weeks of up and down, up and down. I believe that I actually had the coronavirus through January and February because I'm old and it took me a while to shake it. But I'm back and I'm ready to go doing quite a few webinars on the internet for different companies. So be on the listen out for those. So until then, until next time I have a podcast posted next week, hopefully, I will talk with you soon.